Welcome to the Weight Loss for Women podcast, where we teach you how to break free from restrictive diets, restore your metabolism, and build a body you love so you can look and feel your best as you age. All right, let's dive into this episode.
I'm Kitty Bloomfield, co-founder of New Strength and Saturate, creator of Pro Metabolic Food Supplements and Seriously Saturated Skincare. And today we have our friend Isaac Pollman back on the podcast. He is the creator or founder of the Pollman Institute. He's a type 1 diabetic nutritionist. And so we're just actually having some conversation before about what he's been up to lately and how he's grown the business and just how he's really changing people's lives. So maybe initially, oh, and we're going to talk about fucking carbs because I just think that it can't be talked about enough. And who better to talk about it than type 1 diabetic who's eating carbohydrates and changing people's lives by getting them to eat carbohydrates. But just tell, because some people may have not heard of you or listened to our previous podcast, yeah. So maybe just give everyone an update on the book and what you've been doing and some of the, you know, you're just talking about this incredible result with a client, you know, that has type 1 diabetes.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, thanks for having me on, Kitty, first and foremost. So if you guys haven't heard of me, I'm Isaac Pollman, registered dietitian, a fellow person with type 1 diabetes. And we work with people that have blood sugar challenges all over the world, like type 1 diabetes, like type 2, insulin resistance, hypoglycemia. And that's, you know, something that we specialize in. But we do that while still allowing clients to be able to eat carbs because we recognize the importance of carbs, as we'll probably get into today, for whole body health. And we can't just fix it on blood sugar. And I learned that very early on when I was first diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. You know, at that time I was having frequent urination and brain fog. And as soon as I ate carbs, I just felt this immense tiredness. Like I needed to sleep right away. And when I got the test results back, my A1C was a 9.7, which is a measurement that you just use.
Sorry, just cutting in there. Yep. People may not know what A1C is. Can you just quickly explain
that? Yeah. Yeah, 100%. So it's a long-term measurement of blood sugar control. And so what it's basically looking at is your blood sugar control over the last 3 months, and it's dictated based on the average blood sugar that you have had. And so it's measured based on the what's called hemoglobin. So that's a portion of your red blood cells. They're in the bloodstream of the body and the attachment of carbs to that. And so it's measuring the percentage of the overall hemoglobin that has all these carbs attached to it. And so the higher your blood sugar, the higher the A1C marker. And so it's a great long-term blood sugar marker, especially if you have prediabetes, insulin resistance, diabetes. It's a great marker for that more long-term. And so for me, that was 9.7. And the ideal range, just so that the listeners have that, ideally you want this below 5.7. So I was at 9.7, so 4 full points above. And so I had that. I had low testosterone. I had imbalanced thyroid labs. I had so much going on. And so, you know, I really felt lost and confused because I viewed myself as a very healthy person, right? I was doing all the right things. I was limiting carbs. I was eating really clean, right? I was staying active. I was a collegiate soccer player, but yet I was still having these issues. And so that's when I really started to develop my method in terms of I couldn't get it, the support that I needed from my doctors. I couldn't get it from a dietitian and nutritionist. So I had to kind of build it myself. And thankfully, I had good mentors in my life to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. But eventually, I saw results where I was able to lower my A1C from a 9.7 to a 5.6 in just 3 months. And that was still while eating carbohydrates. I didn't cut any of those out. And, you know, I didn't feel restricted. And that was the great thing. And then I didn't have those symptoms. I didn't have the fatigue. I didn't have the low testosterone. I didn't have the imbalanced thyroid labs. I didn't have the frequent urination, the unquenchable thirst that was really plaguing me. And so that's the cool thing. And then, you know, we wrote a book about it, Have Your Carbs and Eat Them Too, basically describing that process that I went through, but also our clients go through as well.
Yeah. And you know what I love about your work too, which you talk about all the time and we talk about with our clients is like, it's not just like stress and how much stress plays into this. And I'll get you to explain this and talk about it in more detail because I think people, they're like, oh, I'm insulin resistant. It's like, well, look, this is how I like to think about it in layman's terms. This is how I think about it. Like insulin is the key that unlocks the door to let the glucose into the cell. So it's not actually the carbohydrates that's the problem. It's the inability of the carbohydrates, the glucose, to get into the cell for various reasons. So when you remove the carbs, it's just actually removing the symptom, not actually treating the root cause. And so when I think about it, I'm like, oh, that really makes sense. So I'm going to get you to talk in more detail about all of these different mechanisms and, you know, how stress plays a part, in it. And because I think there's so many women that are just like, I just need to cut carbohydrates, not only to lose weight, but like to improve this insulin resistance. And there's people like fucking, you know, that woman, what's her name? The Primal Bod. Have you seen her? The Primal Bod?
Oh, yeah. God. I think.
Yeah, like so many people, there's this, I did this reel. She's like, don't eat fruit, it makes you fat. Like if you're pregnant, don't eat fruit. And I'm like, this is the sort of fear mongering that makes, and like all these people like, no, but I jumped on there and did her program and, you know, I lost all this weight and, you know, reversed my insulin resistance. And I'm like, well, maybe it worked initially, but I'll get you to talk about long-term what the effects are of, so where should we start? Maybe you can talk a little about the, like at a cellular level, like what's happening in insulin, carbs, you know, maybe start there so people can understand what's actually happening.
Yeah. Yep. And I'm going to actually start a little bit before that, because there was something that you mentioned. We need to know why should we be even having carbs?
Good idea.
And almost like break that mold of like carbs equal insulin resistance or carbs equal diabetes. Right. And so there was a physician back in the 1930s, like late 1930s, 1940s, a guy by the name of Walter Kempner. I'm not sure if you've heard of him before, Kitty. But basically he was this doctor who initially he was working with people that had like high blood pressure, kidney disease. And he was trying to find like a diet that was really going to be helpful for them. And so he stumbled upon what's known as the rice diet now. And it's not like I'm recommending this diet, but more so the gold nuggets within it. And basically, if the listeners aren't familiar, it's a diet that has like 95% carbohydrates. So like a lot of carbs, even higher than pro-metabolic. And so he put these, his patients on this diet, and it's obviously very high in carbs, very low in protein, and very, very low in fat. And that's the key thing. And so what they saw was not only did their kidney failure actually reverse, their obesity reversed, people lost like hundreds of pounds, their diabetes reversed, their diabetes complications reversed. And so they had such big improvements. And so he basically steered it towards those with blood sugar challenges, those with diabetes. And so if we're saying that carbs contribute to diabetes, why wouldn't this contribute to diabetes, right? It actually had the exact opposite effect. And so it's not the carbs, it's your inability to tolerate the carbs that's the problem, right? And so one of the gold nuggets of this is something called the Randall cycle. And so I don't want to go too much into the weeds with this, but basically at its simplistic level, what it means is as fat in the diet increases or your exposure to fat increases, your ability to tolerate carbs decreases, right? So it's kind of like a seesaw. When one goes up, the other goes down. And so in this diet, obviously fat was the lowest macronutrient of the whole diet, carbs being the highest amount. And so because fat was reduced to such a degree and carbs were increased to such a degree, the carb tolerance improved. And that was a big reason why people were losing weight, were controlling their blood sugar better, were reversing type 2 diabetes, was because of that fact. And so it got down to the core of it. It didn't eliminate carbs and improve someone's tolerance to that. And part of that is because people are just exposed to huge amounts of fat, both in terms of diet, but also a key part that you mentioned earlier with the stress piece. When our bodies are stressed, they release fats into the bloodstream. And so that can also lower your body's ability to tolerate carbs as well.
And also like does cortisol, like cortisol blocks, it will also inhibit that, I guess, block the key to unlock the door to let the glucose in, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, you hit on the next step is like, okay, now we know like cortisol is a contributor to this Randall cycle. What else does it do? Well, when we have high exposures to stress hormones, there's three things that happen. Number one, that insulin doesn't work as well. And so our body has to produce more and more and more. And when our body is producing more and more of this insulin, initially it can help to keep our blood sugar in a range. But eventually the body is so exposed to it, it almost becomes desensitized to it. It doesn't work as well, right? And so when it doesn't work as well, the glucose in our bloodstream rises, right? And so that's one thing that happens. The other thing that happens is our ability to tolerate carbs then also decreases since insulin isn't working. That's a big part of that. The third part of it is we start breaking down our muscle mass, like our metabolically active tissue that we really need to actually control blood sugar, especially after we eat carbs, where we're kind of eviscerating that. And so if we don't have that tissue around, it's going to be very hard to prevent those spikes post-meal. And so we have that going on. The last thing that we have going on is the more stress that we have, the more stress hormones that our body's releasing, like cortisol, It depletes us of the very vitamins and minerals that we need to keep our blood sugar stable. Things like sodium and potassium and magnesium and calcium and B vitamins, all of these nutrients are what's called water soluble, meaning that they are lost in the urine. And so stress is something that's known as a diuretic, meaning it makes you pee more frequently. And so obviously we're peeing more frequently, but guess what follows that? It's all the nutrients that support better blood sugar is what we're losing. And so it's like this triple whammy that we have going on here that is impacting our blood sugar in a variety of different standpoints.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Like when you actually learn this stuff, you're like, oh my God, like just cutting carbs and eating a high fat diet. Talk about then why is it then obviously, well, I think people typically when they do this like carnivore or like her like high fat, their diet was pretty shit before. So they were taking out all of the shitty foods. They're just feeling better from eating less processed food, getting small animal protein, which is really important, fat-soluble vitamins, reducing that digestive discomfort because they're not eating maybe a lot of processed foods or, I don't know, hard to digest foods. And then obviously they cut out entire macronutrients. So one, they lose water initially because water, it holds, glycogen holds water in the muscles. So they see that, but then they're eating in a deficit because it's just easy to cut out and actually you lose weight, obviously. But then, and I think too, because people are running off these stress hormones. Like I remember what it was like for me. I initially felt really alert and awake, but then in time, I couldn't sleep. It affected my cycles, my digestion, my energy. So talk about, okay, what's going to happen long term if you're consistently cutting carbohydrates out of your diet?
Great question, because you hit an important point. We often look at stress as being like this really bad thing, but in the short term, it can actually be quite helpful. Like it helps to increase energy, it helps to keep us focused, it helps to almost suppress appetite so we don't eat as many calories, right? And so that can be such a great thing in the short term. And that's, I think, part of the benefit of what we experience when we cut out carbs initially or when we improve our diets. A lot of times we're running off of these stress hormones, and it helps to kind of keep us up, even though our diet really isn't the most optimal thing. Over time, though, that starts to catch up to us, especially the more stress hormones that we're exposed to, because like we talked about before, we're losing muscle mass, of course, so we're not expending as much energy as we normally would. And so that's certainly a key. But also when these stress hormones are chronically released, a lot of times our body becomes what I call less resilient, meaning we start not being able to produce as much of the hormone itself. We can become more depleted that we actually don't produce as much of the hormone. And so we don't get the initial benefits that we once got. Like an initial benefits being, hey, we're feeling energized, we're feeling focused, we're feeling ready to go, we can make it through workouts. Well, now that we don't have that benefit because we're not producing as much of the hormone itself, we feel more fatigued, right? We can't get through workouts. We feel more depleted. We are more insulin resistant, actually. Insulin resistance rises the more that our body is under stress, right? And so the benefits of the diet change that happened initially almost completely flip by the time that long term sets in. And everybody is different. Some it's weeks, some it's months, some it's years. But eventually, the more that we don't have that balanced diet, the more that we're going to experience those negative effects. And I'll wrap it up with this. Carbs are one of the most anti-stress substances that we have. And the reason for that has all to do with something called thyroid hormone, which I'm sure that, metabolism, you talk a lot about. The reason why it's anti-stress is because those carbohydrates are stored in our liver and they give us another energy source to pull from. And our body is an energy being. We run on energy. If we don't have energy, we die. And so when our body has access to that, we don't need to release as much stress hormones into our bodies to get that energy from breaking down our muscle or breaking down our fat, for example. So when we have that, it's anti-stress. But also, one of the biggest reactions that exists within the body is it helps to activate thyroid hormone. What does that mean? A lot of the hormones that our body produces are not in their active state. They're in their inactive state. They need to be changed. Almost like, think about it like this, like you take one of your supplement bottles and you twist the cap off and there's that seal that you need to lift off, right? Well, think about an inactive hormone as having the seal on still. It needs to be changed. You still need to rip off that seal to get access to the capsule. Now, what removes that seal in the body, that proverbial seal? It's the carbohydrates. The liver needs energy in order to activate these hormones so they're actually usable. What does that help with? Well, the thyroid hormone impacts the health of every single cell in the body. So you talk about mental health, stress, mood. You talk about physical health, sleep, digestion, energy. You talk about lab work, A1C, blood sugar, insulin, blood pressure, cholesterol, hormones, right? All of these things are impacted by thyroid. But if we just put our blinders on and say, hey, carbs spike blood sugar, I have blood sugar challenges, therefore I should remove carbs, we're not seeing this impact that carbs actually create in a very helpful way.
Yeah, and actually, you just prompted me because this is going to be another question. Can you talk a little bit more about, because I see people go, oh, like insulin is a fat storage hormone. It's not. And insulin spiking, like it's normal. Like you should have some rise in insulin, right? Like, can you talk a little bit more about that? People are so afraid, like, oh my God, it's spiking my blood sugar. I'm going to gain body fat. Like, it's like, guys, talk more about that because I think that's, yeah.
It's such a huge misnomer, I think, and I think it's well-intentioned, with that, because I think there's such a popularity with CGMs and tracking health data these days. And I think it's great that people are informed in that nature. I also think you and I tend to attract the very health-conscious person, right? They're not somebody that's starting at the basic level. Typically, they're a little bit more advanced. They've been down the diet rabbit hole a lot. And so when someone comes to us in that nature, sometimes we need to pull the reins back a little bit and get back to a little bit more normalcy. And when I say that, especially when we're tracking blood sugar, we can run into the expectation that blood sugar should just be this flat line all throughout the day. And even if you look at metabolically healthy people that don't have blood sugar challenges, don't have diabetes, even their blood sugar will bump up after a meal. And there's an important reason why that happens, but I'm going to give you an analogy to really hit this home. Imagine that you are working out and you're doing your deadlifts, Kitty, or you're doing your squats, and you're doing these exercises and your heart rate is going up, your blood pressure is going up, right? If someone were to say, hey, let's check your heart rate, let's check your blood pressure, in a vacuum, we might see, wow, your heart rate's really high. Wow, your blood pressure is really high. Wow, you might be at risk for some cardiovascular issues. Like, you need to get checked out. In a vacuum, it might seem like that. But what we know about exercise, we actually need that heart rate to come up. We actually need that blood pressure to come up. Why? Because we need to get blood flow to our muscles that are working, our legs, our glutes that are working, back to our brain so that we can perform the exercise, but we also don't pass out in the process, right? So let's take that example and apply it to blood sugar. What could be the possible benefit of rising blood sugar after a meal? Well, going back to our conversation around the liver absorbs the extra carbs, stores it away, helps to prevent the exposure to excessive stress hormones, and it helps to activate hormones like thyroid hormone, which play a role in the health of your entire body, right? But again, if we're just looking at keeping a blood sugar the flat line, you might have okay blood sugars, but you're certainly not going to be optimized for your whole health. And we find, across the board, when people just fixate on their blood sugar, they are more fatigued, they are more depleted, they are losing their hair, they are losing their cycle, they have really low thyroid labs. Doctors are putting them on thyroid hormone when they really don't need it. They really need more nourishment.
Oh, totally. I think you nailed it there. Like because we obviously don't work with exactly the people like you, but women come in with thyroid issues because they've just been dieting. Like they're dieting to try and, like lose. They do all this crazy stuff. And this one woman I interviewed recently, she got all her thyroid medication. She built muscle. She's sleeping through like, and all we did was increase her calories, lowered stress, got sun, started walking more, strength training, eating all the nourishing foods like that we talk about, fruits and root vegetables and liver and oysters and dairy. And it's like, it's so crazy. I'm not saying that supplements aren't beneficial because I take supplements myself, as I'm sure you do. But the basic foundations are there first. And actually, this is, you've just made me think about another question. So women, and I get this, they're so scared of fruit. They're so scared of sugar. Like, can you talk a bit more about that? I saw you did this great post the other day about like grains. Like people think, oh, I should eat all these starchy grains. Like that's going to be better for my blood sugar and that's going to be more healthy. And I remember the very first time I read my business partner's article defending fruit and other non-complex carbohydrates. Can you talk around that? Because I feel like that's a bit of a mis- and fructose as well. Talk about fructose.
It's such a huge conversation, and I think the topic, especially as like many people in like the pro metabolic space, they might refer to it as like sugar. And I think we associate sugar with diabetes, or we associate sugar with high blood sugar. And you know, that couldn't be further from the truth, especially if it's the right sources. And that's the thing. I think a lot of social media is missing a lot of nuance, right? And a lot of understanding. And I don't blame people for that, because what, we have 5 second reels, we have 10 second reels, we're scrolling, we're doing 10 other things while we're trying to watch these social media posts. So I get it. But when we look at something like sugar or fructose, it can be one of the most beneficial things, especially for someone with blood sugar challenges. And why is that? Well, think about, you know, there's two forms of carbohydrates. There's sugars and there's starches. And so sugars, think about it like this. It's like a house, like a brick house, and that's representative of the sugar. And the individual bricks of that house are glucose and fructose, right? And then we have starches. They're like this wooden house, right? And the starch is that wood house, and then the individual wood panelings, it's all glucose. And when we look at glucose, it's a form of carbohydrate that needs insulin to be absorbed. And whenever someone has blood sugar challenges, their insulin pathway to some degree is disrupted. Maybe they have a deficiency, maybe we have the insulin resistance, maybe the combination of the two. But either way, that pathway is disrupted. And so if we just force glucose down their throats, essentially what we're doing is feeding right into that damaged pathway, and they're not going to process it really well unless they're working on things outside of nutrition, things like circadian rhythm support, things like stress, things like minerals. But even then, for some people, it makes it really hard to tolerate it, especially at first. Versus if we look at sugar, the sugar form of carbohydrate, it has glucose, which is again a form of carbohydrate, but it also has the fructose. And fructose is another form of carbohydrate that is better tolerated than glucose, especially for those at the very beginning. And why is that the case? Well, it's absorbed differently. Think about it like this. You have an insulin pathway and it's damaged. Think about that like a construction site. You know, you're taking your summer vacation, you're riding down the road in your car, and you hit a construction site. There's a detour pathway typically to get around that, right? Well, fructose is kind of similar to taking this detour pathway. So you're still getting to your destination, but you're taking a different path there. And that's the same thing with fructose. It's absorbed directly into the liver, and it doesn't need insulin to be able to do that. And because of that, it creates a lot less flux or fluctuations in your blood sugar. And so it can be one of the most beneficial sources of carbohydrates, especially for those clients starting off that has heavy insulin resistance or heavy insulin deficiencies or really big blood sugar swings. And so what has fructose? Well, you just talked about, Kitty, any kind of fruit will have fructose. Anything that has like a sweet flavor, that's what fructose brings. And certainly the attraction will be like the refined sugars and the sugar in donuts and cookies and candy. But really the solid, the healthy type of fructose will be in fruits and squashes, and even a little bit of root vegetables, like a sweet potato, for example, will have that fructose and will make those carbs a lot easier to be tolerated versus really being the heavy on the grains and the whole wheats, pastas and whole wheat breads and whole wheat crackers, even though that's the thing that's most commonly promoted to people with diabetes.
You touched on this briefly before. Can you talk about so like one of the fruits that I love, and I eat a lot of oranges, like whole oranges, is potassium. So can you talk about like fruit and potassium and how that helps with blood sugar and
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I think the great Ray Pete said it best, where potassium has like insulin-like qualities, where it can help to pull almost that glucose into the cell. And when we look at potassium, it is one of the most common deficiencies that we see, just not even looking at testing, like just looking at someone's diet, right? Because we need about 4,800 milligrams of potassium. Like that's
That's
huge.
a
That's like
lot.
a absurd amount, right? And it's going to be very hard to meet that if you're not at least conscious of the types of carbs, the types of vegetables, the types of proteins that you're eating. And, you know, when we look at potassium, it helps to improve carb tolerance. It helps to improve glycogen storage. It helps to obviously bring those carbs into the cell so we're actually processing it. it actually has been shown to really help to improve energy as well. And so all of those kind of were working together. And when we have clients that are really carb intolerant, oftentimes we find, one, they're probably not choosing the right carbs, but also two, they're not including enough of this potassium in their diet as well. And so this is a huge component. The other thing that I will mention with this is it's two-pronged, I like to say. One, it's about including the right sources of potassium through fruits, through squash, through root
potatoes
vegetables.
Potatoes are pretty good too, right? Potatoes, yeah.
They bring about, like, if it's a good one, they bring about 1,000 milligrams of potassium in
Love
just
a good
one
potato.
Hit. Right, yeah. So, like, those types of foods are helpful. The other thing that you mentioned, though, is, like, the stress response. Like, when we have a high stress response, we're basically losing that potassium. And so one of the analogies that I probably brought up on another podcast of yours, but I call it my leaky bucket analogy, right? Mm-hmm. So imagine, like, improving your blood sugar, improving your health. You're trying to fill up this bucket of water, but the bucket has holes in it, right? And so every time that you try to eat these good, healthy, potassium-rich foods, you basically just lose all the potassium. Mm. And so what we need to do is really plug those holes. And what does plugging those holes mean? It means addressing your stress in your life. Now, we can get into that's a whole nother conversation. But essentially, when we can address that, we hold on to potassium better. So we plug those holes. And then whenever we eat potassium, the oranges, the potatoes, it actually stays with us and we get the benefits of that. And so it's important that we recognize both of those as part of the conversation.
Mm. One thing I noticed too, and I'm sure you've seen this as well, like had a sales call with a lady yesterday who signed up to our program, and a lot of women will just find, you know, pro-metabolic and RAPID, and, you know, then they go and eat like, you know, and it's understandable because if you come from this background of, because I was a really, probably like you, like you always looked to me like you were small before, like you weren't really ever overweight. Like I was really good at restricting, cutting sugar and carbs unless I was binge eating. So when they find this pro-metabolic space, unless you obviously like get into the nuances of it, like they just go and eat fucking like heaps of sugar and ice cream and orange juice and like too much fat, too much carbs, too much calories, and they gain a lot of weight. And we often get them come in, you know, they'll put on fucking 40 pounds or like, you know, just a lot of weight. And one of the things that we do in our programs, we track calories, you know, like you, we get them to, let's focus on like potatoes and fruits. Like, yes, you can have some ice cream, but like you've got to have a small amount. Like, remember, it's really high in fat, and track the calories. And we get them to strength train to build more muscle so they're improving their tolerance and they've got that sink for the glucose. We get them to walk. So can you maybe talk a little bit more about that, because I feel like you can't just go and like the calories matter and the fat matters, and I think you can't just go and go, I'm just gonna eat a fuck ton of sugar and fat and not expect that I'm gonna like gain weight, you know?
This is a repetitive story that I hear over and over, and I was a part of that too, because I went full bore into this. It was over a decade ago at this point, but it was when I didn't know anything, right? I didn't know
any
better.
Like, fuck yeah.
I, at that point, I was feeling so miserable. Like, I didn't really care. And I think that's how some people feel, is like, I just want to change. And and it wasn't the change, obviously, that I was hoping for. And I put on a lot of weight during that time. Mm. And I was never an overweight person. And so that was a difficult period for me, like gaining weight and like whole identity thing. But regardless, this is a story that we hear quite a bit, is, hey, I went pro-metabolic, I gained 30, 40, 50, 60 pounds. Now I'm I have pre-diabetes, my A1C, my blood sugar is high, my insulin is high. What do I do? Right. And so it's important that when we're in this space, a lot of people are attracted to it because it improves metabolism. They probably relate to the symptoms of that. Hey, my thyroid is low. Hey, I have low energy. My digestion is really slow. My mood is all over the place, right? They see signs of low metabolism, and then they're attracted to, you know, this pro-metabolic style because they probably have cut out those foods. Yeah. They cut out the ice creams. They cut out the Cokes. They cut out the fruit juice. Exactly.
And how, honestly, like, how good is orange? Like, I fucking love orange juice. Like, it is one of my favorite. You know, like, I remember the first time that I had this fresh glass of orange juice, because I had cut it out for years. I was like, this is like nectar of the gods. So you can easily see how you would just over consume that. And I think a lot of people, you can probably talk about this more, like, you know, if we get women that are sort of insulin resistant, we're like, okay, let's focus on whole fruit first. And I'll get you, because I've seen you do posts on this before, which is a really good, you know, like I can just drink a lot of juice because I am metabolically very healthy. I have lots of muscle. I'm very active, you know, I'm actually dieting now doing a fat loss phase. So I've switched out my juice for whole oranges because they're more filling and I can have more volume. And, you know, so anyway, sorry, keep going. But yeah, yeah. It's sorry, I cut you off there, but I just wanted
No,
to
you're
say
good.
I love orange juice. I hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. I just want to jump in quickly and talk a little bit more about our 28-day Rebuild Your Metabolism Challenge. So if you're new here or you've been following me for a while and you've heard me talk about the RYM method but you haven't jumped in, the 28-day challenge is the perfect way to kickstart your transformation and experience what the RYM method is all about. In 28 days, you're going to learn how to nourish your body, build muscle and strength, lose stubborn body fat, and restore your metabolism using sustainable strategies, all tailored for women over 40. The challenge is designed to show you that real results don't come from deprivation or cutting carbs or fasting or doing endless hours of cardio and HIIT classes. They actually come from fueling your body with pro-metabolic foods, carbohydrates, and building muscle through effective strength training, and then creating sustainable habits that actually work. You're going to learn how to eat more, eat carbs, train smarter, and feel amazing while seeing real progress in 28 days. So if you've been searching for a program that actually works, this is your chance to see how incredible you can feel when you fuel your body and train with intention. So once you sign up, you're going to be invited to the 28-day community platform, which also has the course materials and instructions on how to get set up with our app. So every day, Craig and I spend time answering questions in the community, and we help coach you through the entire process of what to eat, how much to eat, and how to exercise to restore your metabolism, build muscle, and lose body fat sustainably, all while using the new Strength Tracker app to track your progress, your training, and your nutrition. You can jump on our weekly live coaching calls to ask questions and get personalized coaching, or just reach out in the community at any time and ask questions. The calls are recorded and saved to the course materials. So if you can't make it live, don't worry, you can always watch the replays and you get lifetime access to the course materials. We're going to teach you how to set realistic body composition goals, not just weight loss goals, how to set macronutrient targets specific to your goals, and build your own pro-metabolic meal plans. We also have recipe books, meal plan examples, and food lists. We're going to help you customize a training program that fits how many days a week you can train, how long you can train for, what equipment you have access to, and any injuries. And don't worry, we cover everyone. So whether you have zero experience training, you've never set foot in a gym, to you're an advanced lifter that may be potentially not seeing the results that you want. So I'm going to pop a link in the show notes with all the details, and let's get back to the podcast.
Yes. Yep. And you're right. It like opens a whole new world for them. And so it's like, wow, orange juice is healthy. Wow. Ice cream is healthy. Wow. Yeah. These juice gummies are healthy. And you know, they can be healthy given, you know, in a given context where the person like you is metabolically healthy, have a lot of muscle mass, right? They're staying active. But for someone who's really in a depleted state, it's going to set them up for their body is primed for fat gain, essentially. Yeah. And when we introduce all these calories all at once, it's very likely that they're going to gain a lot of fat in that process and therefore have blood sugar issues as well. And so I would tell anybody in this space is to – I know it's really hard, but to be as patient as you possibly can and go really slow there. You know, for anybody that's introducing carbs back in – you know, starting off with things that are obviously like whole foods, and especially, you know, I went through a whole masterclass on this, but I call it like zones, just to kind of give people an understanding about that, right?
Yeah.
So like a green zone, I call it like, it's the fruit category. It's the best, in my opinion, the best tolerated carb for people starting off. And you could start with that. And then the orange zone, which is, or I'm sorry, the yellow zone. The yellow zone is the squash, right? And so starting off with those zones first, getting their body introduced to the carb and then gradually increasing it up, maybe testing out root vegetables, maybe testing out grains, maybe pairing them together. Like, hey, I've been on this with the fruit for a while. I've been with the squash for a while. Let me test out some sweet potato. So they might do some sweet potato with some fruit or some squash with some fruit, right? And so they're gradually starting to get their body used to it while they're working on things like their stress, while they're working on things like their circadian rhythm, like their movement, building muscle mass. And so by the time that they are ready to have carbs, they can actually tolerate them again because they have the foundations in place to do that.
And quickly, you just made me think about something else. Talk about the importance of like, and I see women just see massive improvements in just doing this alone, like getting the macros right and getting the protein, carbs and fats, the ratios right for them, and then balancing the meals. Like they get up, they have a breakfast with, you know, 30 grams of protein, 60 grams of carbs, and 10 grams of fat, and they eat balanced meals, they're like, oh, I feel incredible. Like, talk about the importance of why we want to put the protein, the carbs, and the fat together in terms of blood sugar and satiety.
Essentially, where I link it is another analogy. Think about it like you're building a campfire. I don't know if
I love all these analogies, by the way, Isaac.
Oh,
I love all these great analogies.
Yeah.
It just makes it really easy for people to understand. You're like, I've got an analogy for that one. It's good.
But well, I'm glad it resonates because, you know, I think sometimes with these complex topics, it can
hard
go
to
over some
understand.
people's head.
Yeah.
And I recognize that. But essentially, like I grew up camping and we camped all the time,
Same.
especially in the summertime. And it was always fun, but we built a campfire always. And we started off like you start off a campfire with like twigs and maybe some newspaper. If you're lucky, you might have some gas that you can pour onto it. But either way, it starts off as this kind of like this pile of twigs and you get it going, but that's not going to sustain that fire, right? It's not going to burn for hours. You really need to put these dry, dense logs on that fire to be able to do that. And it's very similar to your meals. We find for many of our clients, they're eating way too lightly throughout the day. They're like twig meals. They're like yogurt and cottage cheese and a little bit of fruit and a protein bar and a protein shake, right? You know, oatmeal on its own. You know, there's these little things throughout the day that are essentially twig meals. We see this a lot with like trail mix or nuts even too, where they're just not eating the density that their body needs. And you speak to like the meal combinations. Well, we really want to build meals around protein, fiber, and then look at bringing carbs in a way that your body can tolerate, meeting where you are. Like if you have really heavy insulin resistance, we probably can't go too crazy with those. Maybe we start with the zone, the green zone and the yellow zone at first to be able to get your body used to that and really build your meals around that heavy protein, the eggs of the world, the chicken sausages of the world, the steaks of the world, like really dense quality proteins, the seafoods, the salmons, the shrimps, right? Where you can get in a little bit more of that density as well. And so if we can do that gradually over time, that helps us to stabilize that blood sugar. And if we go back to our analogy, the more of those dense meals that we can have, the more it burns for hours and hours and we stay satisfied. One of the biggest problems that we see with people with blood sugar issues is that they tend to feel very hungry shortly thereafter they eat, right? And so many times it can be other things like stress and circadian rhythm behind that, the circadian rhythm disruption. But a lot of times it can be they're just simply not eating enough for what their body needs. And it's actually, I'm sure you can relate to this, it's actually surprising how much you really need to have to really make sure that your body's satiated. I know for many people coming from a diet background, they might be used to eating really small, but they scared of weight gain, scared of going backwards, scared of appearance changes. And so what we find is we really have to push people to be able to eat more, not necessarily in terms of calories necessarily, but in terms of voluminous foods, right? The potatoes of the world are a lot more voluminous than a piece of bread. Not to say that bread's bad, but it doesn't give them the volume that they need.
Yeah, and I think too, like, you know, I'm just talking about this from a dieting perspective. Like, you know, I'm eating 20 because we came to Thailand and, you know, I just a bit too much enjoying, you know, the Thailand food and having a few too many cocktails on the weekends and, you know, just too much calories, you know, probably a bit too much high fat, not as active. And you would think you'd be more active in Thailand. It's not great for walking and it rains a lot. So not quite as active as I was in Australia. So over about 7 month period, I've gradually gained about 2.5 kilos. And it sort of wasn't an issue because just where workout goes most of the time, they're loose. You know, a kilo here or there is not much. But then I put on these jean shorts like a few weeks. I was like, oh, fuck, these are really tight. Like you need to just do a little fat loss phase. So I'm eating 20. I don't know what maintenance calories are because I've been tracking, but they're reasonably high. I've been eating 2,200 calories, just dropping weight every week. You know, but one of the things, strategies I'm using is like, usually I drink a lot of juice because I just love fruit juice. But now I'm like, okay, how do I get the maximum volume in my meals? So like my lunch at the moment is like a pulled chicken, some mashed potato. I quite like spinach. I like steamed spinach. I'm having some like steamed sautéed spinach. And then I'm having two whole oranges, whereas for the same amount I could have 200 mils of juice. So it just is keeping me a lot fuller. My dinner is prawns. What am I having? Prawns. rice, some white rice, I think, and again, whole fruit, mangoes, oranges, you know, just yogurt with bananas. I mean, in the morning, I still have my sourdough because I'm like, I just fucking love sourdough. I'm like, you know, it's like I have two slices, one with butter and Vegemite. Vegemite's like an Australian thing, and one with jam. But then I have two whole oranges. I have eggs with cheese. I have a coffee with collagen, you know, so it's still reasonably filling, but yeah, exactly. It's like sort of how do you get the most bang for your buck, which is going to fill you up, give you those, you know, getting the potassium, getting the vitamin C. I'm getting a lot of nutrients as well. So it's like, yeah, I think like I really, and I'm sure you agree with this, you know, people that just do like if it fits your macros, like the calorie and the macronutrient matters, but the actual food you eat, they both matter. They both matter.
Yep, especially at the level that you and I are seeing clients, like it matters, the voluminous, the bulkiness of a food. And that's why I talk so much about density. I'm honestly surprised at how little that is talked about. Like we talk about like whole foods, of course, but like nuts can be whole foods, but they're not dense, right? And, you know, if we look at potato, it's a whole food, but it's very dense. And so, you know, density, just to be very clear, it's the satisfaction that it brings for you after a meal. Does it last you for 3-4 hours? Or does it only last you for an hour and you're hungry? Or does it only last you 2 hours and you're hungry again? So that can be a great sign if you are actually eating dense enough foods, is how long does the meal actually last you?
Can you quickly talk about PUFAs, polyunsaturated fats?
Yeah, this is a big one, and you know, certainly a controversial one. And you know, I think it's got a lot more attention that I've seen. I don't know if you've seen, you know, a lot of people commenting, and you know, just within the states here with the movement with the new president and all the policy changes that Robert Kennedy is bringing. You know, there's certainly more attention to towards the seed oil conversation, right? And I think that, you know, there's certainly some studies that would suggest, well, replacing PUFAs, replacing saturated fat, I should say, with PUFAs has some beneficial you know, impacts to your health. It lowers cholesterol in the short term. But I find a lot of these studies are very short term, meaning, you know, I would love to see a little bit longer term study in terms of you know, is it actually true? Does it actually carry out? And, you know, my belief around PUFAs, just based on the research that I've seen, is a lot depends on how it's like prepared. Like, is it fried? Is it cooked? Is it heated to really hot temperatures? And that's where it starts to becoming a little iffy around, like, this is something that can really impact blood sugar. This is something that could really impact inflammation, right? And, you know, my approach to PUFAs has certainly changed over the years, but it is certainly a big topic that I think still needs and deserves some attention. But I think there are some influencers these days that are talking about, well, PUFAs are healthy. The name that comes to mind is Lane Norton. I don't know if you've heard of
He but, always, but he's like quoting the studies and he's really on the band. It's interesting. I saw that he one day posted he takes statins.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't know that. But yeah, I think, you know, with those studies, there's legitimacy to them. But I think, one, it's missing context where they're not there. I haven't really seen a lot of long-term studies longer than like 12 weeks. And obviously, like, experimentally, it's harder to do, obviously. But also, two, is like how those fats are prepared. Like, are they heated up? And when they're heated up, that's where the PUFA conversation really starts to hit home. And that's where it really starts to create more of an impact and more of a disruption to blood sugar. And we talked about like the fat in the Randall cycle. That's where this really starts to hit home. And essentially, PUFAs contribute to that in excess, especially when they're heated. They can be promoting of that inflammation, which whenever inflammation rises, so does insulin resistance, so does blood sugar fluctuations.
Do you know what I've always wondered? I'm like, you know, like why, if saturated fat was so bad, why is all of the most nutrient-dense foods on the planet, why do they contain saturated fat? You know, pasteurized eggs, you know, grass-fed meats, butter, coconut, like that's, I just wonder that. I wonder if it's so bad for us, why in nature is it? Yeah.
Versus canola oil versus man-made.
Right? It's so abundant, you know, in the foods, like even as, like if you think back to when, I know obviously our lives have changed and, you know, like back in the hunter-gatherer days, they would have eaten a lot of animal meats and eggs and they still would have eaten like carbohydrates and, but they didn't have access to all these seed oils.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And like, of course, today we're cooking with them, we're heating, we're frying with them, and that's where I think the damage is done. It's really the heating up of oils and fats that are really not stable. They have what's called these double bonds, which when they are broken,
They
they become
become
unstable, and they need basically antioxidants to help to stabilize them. Antioxidants come from things like fruits and roots and vegetables, and of course, all the popular supplements, right? And so, the more that those are heated, the more we consume those. Obviously, it demands more antioxidants. And for many people, we don't have a great antioxidant system. One, because we're not eating the right foods, but also two, our bodies are very, very stressed based on the lifestyle that we live.
Yeah, I know. Just sort of, I mean, again, it's like I think, like I just try because we live in Thailand, right? So like, fuck, sometimes when we eat out, like they use vegetable oils and stuff, and I just don't worry about it. Like, eat the curry, and I think it's just about what you do most of the time. Like, I don't think people have to, eat some nuts sometimes. Eat a bit of canola oil if we go out, but most of the time, my diet is like you say, whole foods, proteins, butter. Eggs, dairy. So it's like I think people can sometimes too get too hyper focused on these tiny little things, and it stresses them out more. It's like, well, fuck, you're not eating any like PUFAs, but maybe you're drinking so much alcohol on the weekend and not getting enough sleep, but not getting enough. You know what I mean? Like it's sort of like, like just a bit more balance, I think. I don't know. It just and
We have
live
these
your
health double standards, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes you just gotta fucking live your life. Like, go out, eat the curry, just do it once. Like, it's not gonna fucking kill you, Enjoy the company. Yeah. Obviously, if
I
you're
think.
very health, like, I think it depends where you are in your journey. Like, at the start, like you say, if you've got these clients, they probably have to be a bit more diligent. Once you get healthy, it's what you do that matters most of the time. Like, yeah.
And I think that's a helpful part of the process too, because I think we can become so fixated on the quality of our nutrition. I'm not saying that everybody should be just eating poorly all the time, but I am saying that, if we fixate too much and we obsess too much, it almost creates more stress than good.
Totally. Yeah. And then again, like the stress piece, I really like that you talk about that because, I'm just thinking about this woman that's in our group coaching program and, Craig got her to track all her data and she's been perfect with her food and she was still having some like sleep issues and perimenopause, just some issues. And then he started to dig a bit and attempts and pulses, all those, dig a bit deeper, mega stress with her work. Her life is just like mega stressful. And so he's like, okay, can we work on this area? And slowly she's implemented things and things have improved, So it's like you can't, the nutrition is definitely important. Like I think it builds your resilience as well. Like definitely, but you can't ignore the stress piece, I don't think.
And I think that's a missing piece for a lot of our clients as well. And it's almost one of the biggest drivers of blood sugar issues that we see. And a lot of our clients have been down the diet rabbit hole. They've done the pro-metabolic, they've done the carnivore, the keto, the Whole30, the paleo, like all of that. And it's not to say that nutrition is not important, but what we find is there's more bang for your buck when you look at stress, when you look at circadian rhythm disruption, when you look at getting outside, when you look at those things outside of nutrition. And honestly, like it allows them to be more flexible with their diet because they're not just pulling on the lever of nutrition, and their progress isn't all dictated based on the foods that they eat. Because when it doesn't work, then they have nothing to fall back on. Versus when you have a few levers that you're working on, maybe you're, like you said, the movement and you're building muscle. Maybe you're working on your circadian rhythm. Maybe you're working on your stress. You're working on these other things, and you have multiple levers in place that are supporting you. Ultimately, even if diet doesn't it isn't helping you, you have so many other layers to fall back on. Versus if you're just working on nutrition, if that doesn't work out, then you have nothing left. And so, when clients are able to look at a variety of different aspects, it actually creates more flexibility with their nutrition, that they can eat out and they can do these things, they can live and still continue to improve because they're not fixed on just one variable to make it happen for them.
Yeah, quickly before we finish up, because you've mentioned this multiple times, talk about circadian rhythm.
It's a huge thing, and I think it's still an underrated piece. And when we talk about circadian rhythm, it's the hormones that your body produces in response to mainly light sources. So light outside or darkness outside. We produce a certain, certain hormones during that time to support our bodies. So during the daytime, we tend to produce more cortisol to help us feel more energized. And speaking of the benefits of cortisol, that's one of them. at night, if our circadian rhythm is in balance, we produce the hormone melatonin. And many people have probably heard of melatonin, but it helps us to be able to sleep, among many other things. The problem is, with our access to phones and smartphones and artificial lighting, it becomes more difficult to balance our circadian rhythm and to really get that hormonal profile. Well, why is that important? Circadian rhythm dictates your ability to sleep, your energy, your blood sugar stability, your carb tolerance, your ability to lose weight, your metabolism, your thyroid health. So it dictates a lot of different things related to metabolic health. And so that's why it's so important. Now, I can give you one example of this, of how it becomes disrupted. Like for me, it's 9:23 at night, and you know, the sun is obviously down by this point. At this time, if my body's being exposed to a lot of screens, ultimately it's not going to produce the melatonin that I need to be able to sleep during the night. And if my body isn't producing enough melatonin, automatically cortisol rises, automatically. And when we have more excess cortisol, what ends up happening is our thyroid doesn't work as well. Our blood sugar is more unstable. We don't tolerate carbs. We lose minerals and nutrients. And so going down that same stress pathway that we just went down with, like the stress earlier, it's the same thing that happens with circadian rhythm. And we work with a lot of clients that have like high morning blood sugar. And they're like, I didn't eat anything for like 12 hours, yet my blood sugar is high in the morning, right? How does that even happen? Well, with circadian rhythm disruption, your liver is more active, right? And when your liver is more active, it basically dumps more glucose into your bloodstream as you sleep during the middle of the night. And so, you know, you're not eating during that time. And so that is the main reason why many people see this high rising blood sugar. And then when you pair that with, you know, the other hormonal profile that, you know, the other impacts that happens with circadian rhythm disruption, then, you know, the cortisol also causes carb intolerances. And so you're starting off at a higher baseline of blood sugar because your liver is excreting more into your bloodstream. But also when you eat, you're not as tolerant to carbohydrates, so your blood sugar tends to rise as well. And, you know, these changes, there's something known as leptin that we didn't even get into today, something called leptin resistance. But we find that in a lot of our clients that are like weight loss resistant, they can't lose weight, they can't improve their blood sugar, they can't get rid of their insulin resistance. That's another huge hormone in the circadian rhythm that is oftentimes disrupted. And a lot of the time it has to do with someone's light environment, not getting outside enough, right? Not getting outside early in the day. In the middle of the day, and then not having the ability to either lower light at night or blocking it, like what I have with these glasses right here.
Yeah, and it's like, I mean, I even noticed last night, I had to work really late last night, had sales calls till like, I didn't get off till 9:30. Then I went and had my hot chocolate, but I was wired, you know, and it was really hard for me to go to sleep. And then I didn't have a great sleep last night. So I think a lot of people do that. I don't do that all the time. It was just last night, but that they do that consistently.
Yeah.
Every day.
And that's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's the consistency of that pattern, right? And that's the biggest thing with circadian rhythm. You know, it operates based on consistency. And so, you know, we work with some clients that are like, what do you call it? Like flight attendants. They're like changing time zones all the time. And the best thing for like those shift workers is obviously their hours are a little bit weird, but the more consistency that they can create with their routines, the more that they can establish daytime, what I call daytime signals, where they eat during the day, they get exposed to sun during the day, they're getting those daytime signals, and then nighttime signals, they're blocking light, they're not eating, right? So the more that they can give themselves those signals during those times, the more balanced their circadian rhythm, even if they're doing shift work as well.
Yeah, it's just like, I feel like people underestimate the sun. Like, oh, we get so much sun. We're so lucky in Thailand. It's beautiful. Like, it's sunny and hot all the time. And I'm really tanned because we constantly are in the sun. But, you know, we'll have a swim in the middle of the day and sit out there, eat my carrot salad straight up in the morning, go for a walk. And I just notice I feel so much better when I actually get more sunlight. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
I think people underestimate that too. Like, sitting out in the sun and just relaxing and enjoying your meal.
Right.
Like,
right.
Yeah, all these simple things. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes we think it has to be really complex, but when you boil it down, it's a lot of simple things. You know, movement, walks, getting outside, eating whole foods, right? You know, a lot of the simple things.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. That was awesome. It was so jam-packed with like so much great information that I think, you know, so many women will benefit from. Sorry, I'm just going to close the notification. So what I'll do is I will pop all of Isaac's details in the show notes, like his website, where you can find his book, his Instagram, follow him. He's amazing. Eat the carbs, everyone. Eat the carbs. Your life will just be fucking so much more enjoyable. Trust us.
Yes.
Not only we have better health, but you'll just like, it's just nice. Carbs, carbohydrates are great. Like you've just, it's enjoyable. Orange juice, sourdough,
yes.
Potatoes, beautiful. Right. The fruit over here is incredible.
Yeah. Fresh, like ripe mango. You have mangoes and
beautiful
pineapple.
Mangoes, pineapple, watermelon, dragon fruit. They have this cool, like, have you seen dragon fruit?
Yeah.
Like every day I have like yogurt at the afternoon. My afternoon tea is yogurt with fresh, like juicy ripe mango. And it's just delicious. So yum.
Mangoes are the best. Those are like
I
my favorite.
I love mangoes too. Yeah, it's brilliant. The good bananas, yeah, everything. And juice over here, they make like freshly, and it's always sweet. Like, you know, sometimes in Australia you get juice, like it's a bit sour and it's not, they're not ripe here.
Yeah.
Beautiful, like it's really the color, beautiful depth, and it's super sweet. They have guava juice. They have passion fruit. So I sometimes will get passion fruit and orange and mix it. Sometimes put a splash of guava in it, put some soda, lots of ice. Fuck, it's so good. But you know,
man, you're making me want to move to Thailand now.
It's really good. It's really good. But I'm like, oh fuck, I'm dieting at the moment. So no juice. I mean, on the oranges now because I'm hungry. I'm like in the third week in, and I'm feeling quite hungry. So I'm like, it's got to eat the whole. Yeah. You know, get the bang for the buck with the oranges. So anyway,
yeah,
not going to be forever. Just got to fit back into those bloody shorts. Not, you know, no booze.
Yeah. How long are you going for?
I reckon it'll take me 8 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Because I've got to lose. Nice. 2.5. Well, I was like 70.7 at 21.7% body fat. I want to get to 68 at 18.
Okay.
So, yeah. I mean, I'm already down to like 69.3 kilos in like 2 and a bit weeks. So it's like crazy. Hey, like just when you build up your metabolism and more muscle, like how much calorie people are like, fuck, you're eating 2,200 calories. That's a deficit. I'm like, I can't even like eating less than this is going to be, I don't want to, I don't think that I'll need to. I just don't believe that I will. It'll just drop off. And then, yeah, just when I get back and increase my calories again, just, you know, stay off so much of the cocktails and so many red duck curries. Oh, well. But see, that's the beauty of it. I don't have to do 8 weeks, you know. It's not going to take me a long time. Not to have to do anything crazy, you know. So anyway, as always, take a screenshot of the episode, share it on Instagram stories and tag me at KITTYBLOMFIELD, and you can win a satchel, saturated premium collagen. A bit tired today because I went to bed late last night. not following my own advice. And follow Isaac and, get his book. It's awesome. He sent me a copy. It's really good. You can enjoy those carbohydrates again. And I'm sure we'll have you on again soon.
Yeah, I'd love to be on, Kitty. Thanks again.
Thanks so much for listening. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, or leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. That helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. You can also keep up with your host and find her content on Instagram at KITTYBLOMFIELD. Once again, thanks for tuning in to the Weight Loss for Women podcast, and we hope you'll join us again on the next episode. Until then.